just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
Welcome, once again, to the New American Dream radio show. Tonight, I'm going to share with you something from one of our sponsors, the Spiritual UN. You'll be hearing their ads later on the show. Getting ahead of the whole game. We're going to put you ahead of the whole game, even those protesters on Wall Street and the upcoming one in D.C. We're going to start from the stark truth that nothing is going to change unless you rid the economic system of its two tiers. Read about that at the Spiritual UN / two-tiered, T-W-O-T-I-E-R-E-D. That's the spiritualun.org/two-tiered. What are the two tiers? Well, one is for the elites to enjoy as they suck up our wealth. The other one is for us, as we build the wealth for them through our blood, sweat, tears, and taxes, while we suffer through depressions, recessions, and all the wars they manufacture in our world. Even the political parties are beholden to this same system, because as long as we have usury, we will always have the same system, the same thing, simply dressed in a new disguise, another different-looking political party or candidate, but really they're the same inside. What is the root of all our evil? Usury. Usury is that absolute no that we find in all religions. They say you're not to charge interest for the loaning of any money. How are we the people being charged interest? Well, through income taxes. They're given not to fulfill the people's or nation's real needs, but to simply do a small conglomerate or cabal of foreign central bankers that took away the right of each nation to print their own money. Through interest or usury, gargantuan debt is created, wars are started to pay the debt, and taxes are used to finance the wars. Now we're getting to the heart of it. Regardless of any political party or candidate, the system is simply an interlocking system of debt, war, taxes, usury, in a repetitive cycle over and over through the decades that give us never-ending cycles of destroyed lives, through never-ending wars and economic hardship. Now we know debt, war, taxes, usury is the system we're really in. That gives us all the realities of our world. If we can't change the system, we never will through the political parties and votes and candidates we vote in. What are we to do? Stay tuned next week for the next Spiritual UN Teachable Moment. I'd also like to throw in a word of thanks to our other news sponsor, the World News Trust. That's worldnewstrust.com. It's a site for news and views, right up to the minute, and with a lot of good writers. Check them out on the web, worldnewstrust.com. And now it's time to turn the mic over to Mike. Mike, co-host and friend, an American writer.
Hey, Chuck. Welcome back tonight, Denver poet Ken Greenlee. He's been with us a couple of times, and we've also extend our welcome to a new guest, Esther Brown. She's coming to us from Lynette, Alabama. Esther is with Project Hope to Abolish the Death Penalty. So we're coming to you tonight from Vancouver, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Lynette, and Denver. It's time again for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra. Those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with the roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. We have a dream, a new American dream of bringing the United States politicians, journalists, and generals who have brought about this long 10-year war and debacle to trial and put it on TV just like OJ every afternoon so every American can watch, just like the McCarthy hearings and the JFK funeral procession. What we need is a new American dream, not of homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. And part of that is becoming the quality of people who are capable of telling the truth. Right now we live on lies. We subsist on lies, but it's not really living. The new American dream means never having to say some questions or idea is not valid. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. There is no hidden black military budget. There are no UFO files Americans can't see. No JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetimes. No destroyed RFK murder photos from the pantry by the LA police. No evidence from Ground Zero on 9/11 swooped away before we could even look at it. We're not the Soviet Union of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That is our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. 9/11 was an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Rice, Powell, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Obama, you name it, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden. They all know that, and yet they refuse to acknowledge what they know. They kill and continue to kill. They allow others to die and continue to send others to their deaths for a lie. What we need in America is a truth commission, just like they had in South Africa, to heal their broken country. Our country is surely broken as well. We need a truth commission. We need to put certain people on the stand, and we need to be allowed to ask questions. The troops are not protecting us. That is somebody's spin on the day's news, somebody's advertising slogan, someone else's sermon. The troops serve the empire. They are not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. American bases overseas serve nobody but the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who are going face-to-face on Wall Street, and those who will begin to gather today in Washington, D.C. to occupy that city. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks. He is complicit. He has lied. He has refused to prosecute. He has continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie, and he knows he is lying. He lied right to our faces on national television when he said that Osama bin Laden had been killed and buried at sea. Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, and Jessica Lynch was rescued heroically. The USA does not torture. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction everywhere. George Bush won the 2000 election. See, there's a plane there in that hole in Shanksville. See? It went all the way into that hole. No, there's no blood and no bodies and no luggage scattered. And we didn't go dig in there after to help and rescue those people. There's no plane parts anywhere. And Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. Remember the anthrax letters which said, "Are you afraid?" You got to know that those were not written with a rock and chisel like Fred Flintstone from the recesses of some cave in Afghanistan. Those letters came from persons within our own government. Like a horror movie, and the killer is in the house with us. Those killers are right here with us, and they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid.
The New American Dream welcomes a new sponsor, the Spiritual UN. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others at www.thespiritualun.org who also want to know the answers to these questions. The Spiritual UN. Another pathway is possible. No human being is the enemy of another human being. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is good to all. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? Not. Smedley Butler, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, the American founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching out for the best part of human spirit, the spiritual UN, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideas to the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and violence. Real men don't kill. War is a crime against us all, not fit for a human world. War and poverty no more, the spiritual UN. Join us, and together we will build that new world. www.thespiritualun.org.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
Somewhere between September 11th and today, the enemy morphed from a handful of terrorists to the American population at large. Once upon a time, in the woods, on an island, down a rabbit hole, there were 19 very, very bad men. They were called terrorists, and they had box cutters. They're very bad. They cut boxes, and they defeat air forces and put holes in buildings and bring down buildings. If you ever see a box cutter, stop, drop, and roll. Anywho, there were these guys and these box cutters, and they were the enemy. If you were for box cutters, you were against us. But now, we're all the bad men. Somehow, we all became 19 men with box cutters who cannot be trusted in airports or to talk on the phone without another adult listening. Somehow, we're all the enemy now. Good night. Do not get up to go to the bathroom or get a drink, or we'll take you very far away for a very long time. We can do that, and no one will ever know or care. Sweet dreams now. Go to sleep.
Toby Keith, The New American Dream presents an American Hero Special. This week we honor singer-songwriter Toby Keith. He put a boot up their ass, not because it sells records, and he knew it would, but because he is an American hero. He put a boot up old men's asses and old women's asses and little kids' asses. He sang while the bombs dropped and cut off children's arms and men's arms and the heads and legs of women and girls. Toby Keith is not a pervert or a murderer or an insane person. He is an American hero.
Denver poet Ken Greenlee has been on our show several times, well, at least a couple of times, and we're glad to have him back tonight to read us some more poems. So, without a further introduction, I'm going to talk to Ken right now. Are you there, Ken? I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good.
All right. How's the weather in Denver?
Windy. We're getting a lot of wind. It's blowing those aspen leaves around.
Yeah?
Leaves are blowing all around, like that Zeppelin song.
Huh. Well, it's still real hot down here in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, I bet you it is. Yeah, I have a friend by Tampa. He was saying it was pretty hot.
Yeah. I think what I'd like you to do is just go ahead and read us some poems with a little bit of background on them, and then we'll talk a little bit more at the end.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. Go for it.
A lot of these poems were inspired by the political events that are going on, but I've been trying to find some poetry or some beauty in the commonplace. So we'll start off with some political stuff and then have some commonplace poems at the end. First one's called Bad Cartoon. Bad Cartoon. Imperial America today. Bad cartoon. Like Wile E. Coyote run amok with razor-sharp fangs and claws and futuristic Acme products gone awry. Spy satellites prying into everybody's business. Drone missiles raining hot metal on civilians. Depleted uranium glowing radioactive on battlefields across the world. The rest of planet Earth, a desperate roadrunner, running like hell to get away. Blood-soaked, homicidal, maniac coyote running after them, axe in hand, soothing voice pleading, "Come back! Come back! My children! Why don't you love me? I'm coming to save you again. This one's called Bear Stalingrad. What is going on here? The last time I counted, my government was bombing 6 different countries. Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. Yep, that's 6. This is just what we know about. The last government that started actively bombing that many countries at once were the Nazis in World War II. They felt they had the right way, just like our government does, and tried to force it on everybody else, just like them, and brought in the bombers whenever somebody disagreed, just like them, on top of the world for a while, just like them. Well, just remember, the Nazis got their comeuppance eventually. They met their Stalingrad by and by. What I wonder is, when will the bloody masters of America, who rain death out of the sky daily, who kill civilians like swatting flies, who torture people then justify it, when will they meet their Stalingrad? Yeah, that one I wrote because there's a lot of anti-war poetry out there, but a little of it visualizes the eventual defeat of the fascist government that we have running this place. So I wrote that poem. Here's one called Immolation, Altar of Change. This will cheer you up. Mahmoud Bouazizi, remember the name. He's the one that started it all across the Arab world, lighting himself on fire to protest the dead life his government condemned him to, igniting incendiary change, old deadwood governments burning to the ground, the whole thing spreading like a grass fire throughout the whole Arab world. Even if you don't believe the surface story, even if you believe the CIA is behind it, even if you think the U.S., Britain, and France are manipulating it now, the fact remains Mahmoud Bouazizi started it all, a poor man who had his small rickety fruit stand shut down and taken away because he couldn't pay the $25 permit, read bribe. So the police came, took away his livelihood, told him to get lost, pushed him away, slapped him around when he wouldn't go. Mahmoud Bouazizi, in the same situation as millions of young men throughout the Arab world, without jobs, hope, or a future. He tried to fight back, tried to go through proper channels, tried to meet with the mayor, who refused to see him. So then he went outside the gates of City Hall, doused himself with gasoline, and lit a match. I try to imagine what it'd be like, but no amount of empathy can ever come close. Mahmoud Bouazizi lived a few days after the burning, then passed into eternity. But not until after his action lit the region afire with change. Old deadwood governments burning to the ground, first in his native Tunisia, leading to the downfall of the despot Ben Ali, who had run the country like his own personal bank, with brutal security forces to keep it that way. Then it spiraled outward, spreading east to Egypt, and the overthrow of the Western puppet Mubarak, then west to Libya, and the 42-year-old extraordinary rendition dictatorship of Muammar Gaddafi. Soon the populations of Bahrain, Yemen, and Syria joined in. A lot of change with that one lit match, one life given up, a fire that lit the way. Now everyone sees that maybe there really can be change, that maybe, just maybe, everyday people really can make a difference once in a while. At least they're willing to try it now in a dozen different countries, even starting here. Maybe one man can make a difference after all. Too bad he had to die to do it. Immolated. Immolate doesn't necessarily mean burn, according to Webster's Dictionary. It means to sacrifice in the first definition, though it adds as by fire in the second. Why should a man have to die to effect change? Well, thousands have. Just a quick look through the history books will tell you that. You'll see the names burned into the pages. Maybe change is such a powerful force that it demands sacrifice, human sacrifice, like the Aztec altars of old. Well, whatever it demanded, young Mahmoud Bouazizi and thousands of others less publicized did whatever it took in spring 2011, throwing themselves to the sacrificial altar of change, dying to change their world. Here's one about my youth called Ray. Even as I traveled lost down dark corridors alone, there was always a ray, a glimmer of light shining in from somewhere, just a spot, a gleam, or a trickle that found and helped me to stumble along. Even as I staggered down murky, twisting stairwells, drunk out of my mind, looking at everything and everyone, cross-eyed and suspicious, the walls and floors lurching. Even as I wallowed in tar pits of bad habit, my mind fogged by clouds, staggering pigeon-toed through a spinning haze. Even as I stormed through red clouds of anger, my heart boiling with rage, even as I punched and kicked and slammed and broke my way through life, even as I lurched through barren minefields of thought, not knowing who was my enemy or who was my friend, even as I dwelt in dark caverns, even as I slunk through sewers, even as I spun in deep whirlpools, even as I slashed with shattered mirrors, there was still a way, a ray, as shone in from somewhere, a skinny little beam, tiny flecks of light on the wall that somehow snatched me from destruction. And then I'll close up with a reflective late afternoon poem. Drained beer glass. Drained beer glass, sitting on the bar all alone. Three rings of beer foam slide down your empty sides ever so slowly. Rush hour traffic flashes by in the long, dim windows behind you. Drained beer glass with three rings of foam sliding down the sides makes the air chillier, the shadows bigger, the bar room emptier. Drained beer glass sitting on the bar all alone at the 5 o'clock hour as the afternoon light fades away, as the afternoon light fades away. That's it.
Well, thank
Hello,
you,
Link.
Ken.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you. Because of your being a resident of Colorado.
Yes.
A classmate of mine, a college classmate of mine, got himself elected mayor of Denver, and now I believe he's the governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper.
Yep, I know him.
I'm curious.
I've met him.
You have?
Yep. Really? Seems like a pretty decent guy. He hasn't done too much damage so far as governor. He was a good mayor.
Okay. Well,
and in fact, he came to the Jazz. There's a Jazz network that's listener supported that's been going for 25 years around here, and at
really?
Their 20th anniversary, John Hickenlooper was there as mayor, you know, to congratulate them. I thought that was pretty cool. You'll never
that's
usually
excellent.
Don't find Republicans at Jazz events, you know.
Yeah.
That's wow, you sure. know him, huh?
I don't know him well, but I knew him when I was in college. I mean, a small
right.
school like Wesleyan, everybody knows everybody. So.
Right. Well, he had great timing. I mean, the Democratic governor quit, and he was a popular mayor of Denver, and Denver's, you know, obviously Colorado's biggest city. So he kind of made the leap, and, well, there he is.
Well.
And actually, we've been lucky here. We've had several good mayors since we arrived, starting with Wellington Webb and Mr. Hickenlooper. Yeah, we've had good mayors. And the new guy we have, Michael Hitchcock, looks like a winner, too. So.
Well, that's good to hear.
It's always a plus when you got the mayor sort of on your
yeah.
side.
yeah. So is there anything you would... you'd like to tell our listeners, you know, someplace that they should go to see you or hear you or someplace?
Yeah, they can go to www.outlawpoetry.com or www.shortstory-uk.com. I have poems and stories posted on each of those websites. You can read more of my work there and find out more about me from either one of those websites.
Okay, well, that sounds good. We thank you so much for coming back again, Ken, and we hope you'll do it again in another couple months.
Oh, my pleasure, and you know I'll be back.
Okay, that's good to hear. Thank you,
okay.
Ken, and have a good night.
All right, you take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
The New American Dream welcomes a new sponsor, the Spiritual UN. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others at www.thespiritualun.org who also want to know the answers to these questions. The Spiritual UN. Another pathway is possible. No human being is the enemy of another human being. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is good to all. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? Not. Smedley Butler, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, the American founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching out for the best part of human spirit, the Spiritual UN, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideas to the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and violence. Real men don't kill. War is a crime against us all, not fit for a human world. War and poverty no more, the Spiritual UN. Join us, and together we will build that new world. www.thespiritualun.org.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
Coming this fall on CBS, Survivor Nebraska. You will survive uncomfortable family holidays, uber patriotic tractor parades, teachers who teach fake American history. The color red, go big red. Red oranges, red candy bars, go big red. Survivor Nebraska. You will be dropped in the middle of town between the cannon and the church and the elevator and the bank and Arby's and be expected to learn to survive by speaking the native tongue, never using words with more than two syllables. Welcome. Do what we say in your life. You will live your life here comfortably in Nebraska. For your physical challenge for immunity, you will search in a haystack for a winning lotto ticket out of here. And you will also wander through a corn maze for looking for a one-way ticket, expenses paid to Minneapolis, Nebraska. It's a nice place. We like it here. We've never been anywhere else. Neither will you. If you do not learn to follow the rules of Survivor Nebraska, you will live to regret it. You can say whatever you like, but if you say something like, you will forever be a stranger among us. The tribe has spoken.
Funding for tonight's program is provided by GoBarbaraBush.com, as well as the United States Navy, a global force for good, the United States Army, be all you can be, the United States Air Force, peace is our profession, and the United States Marines, the few, the proud, the brave, because we could never sell you the truth.
Now I'd like to welcome our special guest, Esther Brown. Esther Brown is coming to us from Lynette, Alabama. Esther is with Project Hope to Abolish the Death Penalty. Esther, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing?
I am doing fine, and I thank you for having me on.
Yes, we've never spoken, but I've been getting your emails. Can you tell me a little bit about Project Hope?
Yes, I can. We are the only death row organization in the country, and I would think most probably, perhaps even the world. We were founded at Holman Prison, which is in Alabama, in 89 by death row inmates, and the executive board is still there, and I'm the executive director on the outside. We our focus is really the death penalty in Alabama. Even though we're called Project Hope to abolish the death penalty, basically our focus is Alabama because we've got our hands full just with Alabama. And the reason we have our hands full is because, for example, last year, Alabama, this small state, sent more people to death row than any other state, including Texas. We also have the largest death row population, per capita death row population in the country. We executed per capita more people than any other state, even Texas. And, you know, one might wonder, why is that so? Well, I would say there are a few reasons. One of the reasons why we send so many people to death row is because we have something that is called jury override, which means that the jury can vote for the defendant to receive a sentence of life without the possibility of parole, and the judge, who is elected in Alabama and who wants to appear tough on crime, can override the jury. He can, in fact, override 12 jurors. Now, that's only possible. There are only two other states that have jury override. One is Florida, and they haven't used it since 1999. And the other one is Delaware, and there's not a single person on death row because of jury override. What one finds in Delaware is that a judge at times overrides the jury when they sentence somebody to death. So, of course, we are sending more people to death row than anybody else. The other huge issue where we are different from all other states is that that the state of Alabama does not provide attorneys for post-conviction appeals. Now, you could ask, why is this bad? Well, it is bad because then somehow attorneys have to be found who are willing to work pro bono. It means they won't get paid. Also, very often, that means they will be out-of-state attorneys. And although we are grateful to the out-of-state attorneys, obviously we are, it does mean that they are far away and that they are not necessarily attorneys whose specialty is capital litigation, which is why at the moment, I don't know whether your listeners have been following the news, Alabama made headlines because we had a case that was argued before the U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday, called the Corey Maples case. What happened there is that there was this inmate here by the name of Corey Maples. He had out-of-state attorneys. It was a wonderful law firm that had taken him on. What was unfortunately not quite so wonderful is that the two attorneys who were representing him both left and forgot to tell their client. So then what happened was when they were notified by the court in Alabama that he had lost an appeal, and then you're allowed to respond, but then you only have a certain amount of time. Well, this notification came to these attorneys. They were no longer there, so the mailroom turned it around, sent it back to Alabama, to the clerk. The clerk didn't do anything about it, and Corey Maples didn't find out that he didn't have attorneys until he got notification that he had missed the filing deadline.
Now, Esther, I'm wondering about the racial mix on death row. How is that broken down?
It's about 50-50.
Okay.
And that is, of course, a huge issue, especially in Alabama. You know, 26% of the population is African-American. Less than 5% of the judges who preside over a capital case in Alabama are African-American. Okay.
These judge
80% of the of the people on death row had a white victim, even though more African Americans are murdered. So obviously, we're sending a message that white lives must be more valuable, right? That seems to be the message.
What is the next scheduled execution that you're trying to fight?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
What is the next scheduled execution?
Could you possibly,
Esther? Hello. What is the next scheduled execution?
Oh, the next scheduled execution. All right, that's already number 6 is going to be on October 20th. A man by the name of Christopher Johnson. It's a little bit of a different case in the sense that he is what we would call a volunteer. He defended himself at his trial, which of course, and asked for a death sentence, which he was given, and he gave up all appeals this May. So he is not looking for a stay. However, we still want people to call the governor, and the number is 1-334-242-7100, and tell the governor that he does not kill in our name. Murder is murder, whether it's done by the state or by an individual, and all murder is wrong.
Esther, how long have you been doing this, fighting the death penalty?
I've been around the death penalty for an awful long time, 28 years, but I've been here in Alabama for 11.
Isn't it hard to keep going?
Well, you know, there are a lot of rewards. The rewards for me is really the interaction with the men on death row. I talk to them every day, and they are my friends. And I don't know. We may not have huge successes, but then now and again we really do. And what is gratifying is that we are the other voice, which was the founder of Project Hope. That was what he said. We've got to be the other voice. So there are many, many rewards, but of course it is very hard. What's hard about it is when it is your friends who are executed. You know, we just recently had the execution of Derek Mason. He was a board member. He should never have been executed because the judge, the original judge, who was for the death penalty, said that at the time of the trial, he was inexperienced and then later realized Derek should have gotten, because of mitigating circumstances, he should have been given life without the possibility of parole. He also had two attorneys who were completely inexperienced. So, and the governor knew that. He got this letter from the judge, and it didn't make any difference. It was horrifying.
Esther, how can people contact you or get a hold of your group or join your group or join your email list? How can they do that?
I would absolutely love that. If you can either email me, and my email address is B Esther, which is B-E-E. S-T-H-E-R at earthlink.net, or better still, go to our website, which is www.phadp.org. And while you're there, I would love for you to join us on Facebook. Our name on Facebook is Project Hope to Abolish the Death Penalty in Alabama, but you can actually go to our website and also go to Facebook from there. And you can contact me from there. You can get on our email list. And we do need your help. You know, I was talking to a journalist the other day, and he said to me, you know, it seems so hopeless. And what I said to him was, you know, I never would have thought that the Berlin Wall would come down during my lifetime, but it did. And so we need for all of you to help us tear down this wall. And with your help, we can do it.
Esther, that's an amazing comparison. I love that. You know, to keep fighting when it doesn't seem like there's any hope at all, and especially against the death penalty. It must be awful hard when you take that step to get to know these folks, and then at some point you have to walk home knowing that they have died. Isn't that terribly hard to do that?
You know, if I understood correctly what you said, I think for many of us, and I think those of us who feel that way are very fortunate when there is really no choice, you know, because there is no such thing as an innocent bystander. And I'm not saying you all have to fight the death penalty. There are many, many issues out there. But once you make a commitment, or once you've really seen it, or seen the people, or, you know, there is no choice. There is no choice. I don't think there is a choice. And definitely one is fortunate. You know, I've never regretted it. I will never regret it. Of course, there are very difficult moments. And then I sometimes think I can't do this much longer, but then somehow I do. And, you know, I expect to do it until I drop dead, most probably. You know?
Esther, you're an inspiration to us all. I seriously mean that. And I thank you for what you do, and I hope you'll find time to come back and join us again on this show real soon.
Thank you, and I thank you very much. I just really, really appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you to everybody.
Thank you, Esther, and good night.
Good night.
Bye.
This portion of our program is being sponsored by President Barack Obama's Even More Change Reelection Committee. You want health care? We got it. You want to end the war? We got it. You want Guantanamo closed? We got it. You want the Bush administration prosecuted for carrying out 9/11 and starting two wars for no reason at all? We got that too. And we've got even more change, more hope, more good things coming to you in the next 4 years. Even more change, even more hope. Barack Obama, the audacity. And make sure to watch this next Wednesday night on CBS after American Idol. Are you smarter than a prison guard?
This public service announcement brought to you by the American Spell and Bee Council of Bowling Green. How do you spell Al-Qaeda? Can you use that in a sentence, please? Yes. Al-Qaeda, the evil towelheads, what drove the planes into the towers and the Pentagon, and now we have to take our clothes off to fly in an airplane, and they do more stuff every day, it seems, and we are scared of them, so we don't care if we have freedom of speech or nothing, because we are Americans, and we have car racing, and we can still kill animals, and we have our guns to keep us safe from deer and elk, and we want our guns, and we salute the troops and the flag and the parade and say, way to go, killing those kids in the mountains over there, because it was Bush who did 9/11 and not those kids, and we really don't know nothing. How do you spell Al-Qaeda? We spell it CIA every time. Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Joe Coffey, some of the media have taken to calling him Coffey Joe, making fun of him. He's on the campaign trail, running for Congress as a Democrat and talking out against war and border fences and prison construction. He and Jane have heard rumblings about the Democratic leadership actually wanting to sabotage his campaign. And the Tinkers, you remember them, Sam Ray, Karen, and Herbert, along with Eddie Zook, have actually gone to Baumgars and bought supplies and ammunition for a proposed takeover of one of the local corporate hog farms to send a message, they say, that small farmers are willing to fight. They gathered in Ray and Karen's kitchen to hash it out with much trepidation because the men all knew Karen was not liking the idea at all.
Karen sat next to Ray and watched the door. The stomping and pounding and rustling of clothes kept on forever. As Karen sat there with her hands folded around her cup, slouched in her wooden kitchen chair, Ray twirled his cup, crossed his ankles. Sam filled the doorway. He scanned the kitchen, then slid inside. He walked across the room, stood facing the coffee pot. Then Herbert appeared in the door, both hands on the jamb, one foot resting on the threshold. Ray made eye contact and looked back at his hands, as if he had to wash them every minute or they might do something bad. Herbert pushed off, made his way around the kitchen door to his chair by the wall under the clock next to the window. Eddie Zook took his turn in the stage door. He put his hands on the frame, stuck his head inside. Jane could not help but smile at his worried look and the curly red hair. She saw the tattoos on his fingers and stopped smiling. He wore black socks, one hole in the right foot over the little toe.
"Come on in," said Sam, his back still to the group. Herbert reached out his left foot and pushed back the chair next to him between himself and Karen. Eddie saw the invitation and calculated how far he had to travel around the table past Karen to squeeze into the chair wedged between the table and the counter which held the computer and radio, whether he could do it and whether it was worth it. "Hey, Ray," he almost whispered as he placed a hand on Ray's shoulder. "Hello," he said to Karen, then made his way into his chair like an astronaut climbing into the capsule, knowing he would never be able to get out again to pee. With one hand, he gripped the leg of the table.
"I got a call. Says you boys made a purchase in town." Herb turned toward Eddie Zook. I told him we were putting together a pheasant hunting farm. I'll look forward to fielding those questions for the next several months. Now, why don't you tell me what's going on?" "Oh, yeah." Eddie squeezed the table leg. Herbert looked over to Ray. "You want to tell me what this is all about?" Sam sat down between Ray and Herb. Herb looked at Ray. Karen looked at Ray. Sam and Eddie watched their own hands make teepees. "It's what we've talked about right here," said Sam, "for years." "Well, there's a damn difference between talking and buying shotgun shells," said Herb. "That's just the point," said Eddie. "Hey, could I get some of that java?" he asked Karen. She resumed staring at her cup. Sam got up, poured Eddie a cup of coffee. "We're done talking," said Eddie, after securing his coffee.
Herb asked what they planned to do and how and who in hell they thought would join them. "Dude, farmers from every effing where," laughed Eddie. Herb and Karen and Ray and Sam stared at Eddie. "You don't mention this anywhere," said Herb, "to anybody." He made a fist and raised it as if to slam the table, but brought the clenched hand down and lightly smooched the tabletop. "Understand?" He made eye contact around the table. "We do need to plan, Dad," Sam said in a guttural whimper. "Fine, plan," said Herb.
"Refresh my memory," said Karen. "We're doing this because?" "Because we have no other choice," said Sam. "We either resist or die. We're going to lose this farm, our farms, everything. Our neighbors are going to sell out and leave. ConAgra, McDonald's, and IBP are going to have this farm, this house, this land. They're going to hire managers, franchise managers on McFarm, unless we do something. Unless we drive into Canopusex with rifles and take over one of his complexes," said Karen. "That's right," said Sam. They stared at each other across the table. Eddie looked back and forth as if at Wimbledon. Ray made the pretense of leaning over the table toward Herb to check a fact in the Des Moines Register displayed in front of him. "We will need support," said Karen. Sam sat back in his chair, as if she'd said, "At ease, soldier." "You'll want the media to know, right?" She looked at Ray. He nodded. "Somehow," said Karen, "you'll have to tell the newspapers and radio, TV, that you're doing this and why. Because you know Kanapasek and the sheriff's office and FBI will be doing their own spin." "FBI?" smiled Eddie. Ray looked over at Karen, the Mount Liberty Lady Frogs all-conference center who averaged 6 assists a game, talking about the FBI spin. "What about the convicts you're going to break out of prison to help?" Karen looked at Eddie, who began to pick at his Guns N' Roses tattoo on his right bicep. "That's not happening," Sam interjected. "What if we hijack the band and these old boys we break out don't want to be broke out?" said Eddie. Without noticing, he squeezed his bicep, checking it for size. "Huh. We bust them out with guns a-blaine and they're just going to the doctor, or they got some 2 months on their sentence, or they just don't give a shit about Hawks. Some don't. Well, we just got to say, never mind, and hand those officers back their keys and their pistols and say, 'Y'all excuse the inconvenience, please drive safely.'" Herb laughed, then Ray, then Sam. Karen smiled through closed lips, put her chin in her hand, and shook her head at the floor.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, Jehovah's Witnesses are about average.
And that wraps up another New American Dream radio show. We thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll come back the same time, same place next week. Thanks once again to theworldnewstrust.com for sponsoring our show, and also the Spiritual UN. Both of these are our new sponsors, and we appreciate it very much. And be sure to stay tuned right here for Black Op Radio with our producer, Len Osanek, coming up next. Thank you, and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
The New American Dream welcomes a new sponsor, the Spiritual UN. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others at www.thespiritualun.org who also want to know the answers to these questions. The Spiritual UN. Another pathway is possible. No human being is the enemy of another human being. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is good to all. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? Not. Smedley Butler, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, the American founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching out for the best part of human spirit, the Spiritual UN. Carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideas to the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and violence. Real men don't kill. War is a crime against us all, not fit for a human world. War and poverty no more. The Spiritual UN. Join us, and together we will build that new world. www.thespiritualun.org